Welcome to Mental Healthy, where we share the stories and expertise of professionals working diligently in the field of mental health. I'm your host today, Dr. Kenyon Knapp.
Well, welcome everyone to the Mental Healthy Podcast. We're glad to have you with us here today. I've got a little bit different podcast today. I think y'all are going to enjoy it. And I'm going to start it out a little different than I do sometimes. A little scripture is always good. In James 1:27, it says, "Religion that our God, our Father, accepts as pure and faultless assists to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world." So right there, you see it's really important to God to care for orphans and widows. And today we're going to talk about orphans, or sometimes they're not orphans, but they're foster kids. And there's a huge need to help foster kids across the country. And we're trying to do that here at Liberty University. My guests today are Professor Cheryl Nitz, who's the Department Chair of Social Work. And she also supervises a really neat program we have. And then we have Master of Social Work student Megan Bueller, who's also the Executive Director of our ABBA Scholars Program. Let them introduce themselves a little bit. Why don't you just share about your backgrounds a little bit? Like, what drew you to being interested at all in foster care work? Yeah, Megan.
Yeah, I can start.
Yeah.
Good morning. I'm really excited to be here.
So I first became interested in working in foster care when I was in high school, and I had actually before that gone to a private Christian school, and most of my friends there came from pretty solid home backgrounds. And then when I went to high school, I had a lot of friends who came from some homes that were less than ideal. Some of them had been in foster care, and I just remember deciding that I wanted to help my peers and help younger kids who have been in those situations. And so after college, I worked with biological families, so people who their kids were in foster care. And then from there, I also worked at a foster care agency where I was a parent trainer. So I taught parenting classes and trained potential foster parents, and then ended up being a case manager for a while. So worked with foster kids in that regard for about 5 or 6 years before coming to Liberty. So that's kind of my background and a little bit of why I decided to start in this work and how God kind of called me to it.
Well, that's neat. How about you, Professor Nitz? What's your background with foster care and adoptive kids, things like that?
Well, as you said, I'm the chair of the Department of Social Work now, so I've been in academia for quite a long time, since I guess about 2007, but I honestly still think of myself primarily as a social worker, and my background was primarily in child welfare, social work with foster and adopted children, had an opportunity to work with children in residential treatment, also had a program with foster children who were aging out. When we talk about aging out, that means children that are in the foster care system that are not able to return to their biological families, which is often our goal, or often when children come into foster care, our desire is to be able to restore the family and help them address whatever problems resulted in the child needing to leave the home temporarily. So our goal is always reunification if possible, but sometimes that's not possible and the family isn't able to address the issues that prompted the placement. So in that case, if children are approaching that kind of aging out period where they might be 16, 17, 18 years old, we shift our focus from working on returning them to their families to helping them get prepared for independence, which is really crazy. Mm-hmm. When you think about it, to think about being independent at 18 years old, and I'll probably talk about that a little bit later too, but to think about expecting an 18, 19-year-old to be able to care for themselves and you know, get a job and pay rent and do all the things that you need to do as an adult to care for yourself. But so I had an opportunity to do some work with some of the teens of getting them ready for independence. Then I had a clinical practice for about 20 years, some of this overlaps, working with children that had particularly early trauma attachment challenges and are often in the foster or adoptive system and their families. So it brought that to my world in academia. That informs the way that we approach things at Liberty, and also had an opportunity to be a foster parent for quite a number of years and adoptive parent. My husband and I have 4 children. 2 came to our family through adoption, and we also had other opportunities to foster. So kind of an opportunity to see some of the challenges that kids have who have been in the system from a number of different angles. And then I had the pleasure to meet Megan, which was a thrill. I remember meeting her. She came to our program as a master's of social work student, which you mentioned, and found out that she really had a heart for foster care and adoption. And I was just really impressed with her knowledge and her intuition just about what these kids need. So I was really excited about then this opportunity. It all kind of came together, Dr. Knapp, when you shared about this initiative and this ABBA Scholars Program opportunity that we had. So I said, I know just the right person who would love to be a part of that.
That's right. I remember that. That was a happy day.
It was a happy day. It was a God moment. It was like, wow, he was orchestrating that for you, Megan, I think. So.
Yeah, well, it's cool. I mean, we're all sitting here and we have kindred spirits about this, and that's just such a wonderful feeling. I'll share a little bit of self-disclose, a little bit about my background, too. I'm similar to you, Cheryl. First off, I graduated college 31 years ago in 1992, and my first job was at a group home for abused kids in North Carolina called Cross North School. It's up in the mountains near Boone. And I developed a preparation for adult living program to help kids who age out of the program there, and worked with a lot of kids who had termination of parental rights, which we're going to get into some terminology here today, folks, and we'll define it for you. When you have a termination of parental rights, it means the court has decided that the birth parents, for whatever reason, usually abuse, no longer have custody of the child. They're a ward of the state, and then the state at that point will either have them in some kind of care or they're then available for adoption or something like that. But I worked with this program from 92 to 94 before I went to grad school, and I loved it. It was great. You know, I'm still friends to this day on social media with a number of the kids I worked with 30 years ago, and it's great. And then when I got married, I've been married 23 years, my wife and I both wanted a large family. And so, similar to Cheryl, we have four kids, four biological, four C-sections. And because of the C-sections, that hurts a lady's body a little bit. And the doctor said you can no longer have any more biological kids. And we both wanted more than four. So thought about it, prayed about it, and we really felt led to do foster to adopt. And so starting about 4 years ago, we've had a number of foster kids, and three of them was the plan to do foster to adopt, and they were supposedly eligible for that. And long story short, sad story short, none of them worked out. And that's happens to lots of people in this field, but that's okay. It's still a success because when you love someone, absolutely, it never goes to waste.
Absolutely.
And we're still looking at, you know, some fostering in the future, but we'll just see, you know, what doors God opens at that point. But anyway, so that's a little bit of our backgrounds and where our hearts were shaped to be interested in this. But, you know, I think we should also talk a little bit about the needs of foster kids. I mean, Megan, you started to touch on it. But I'll quote a few statistics, and then we'll talk about our plan here, our initiative here at Liberty University. Just so you all know, listeners, just, you know, how big of an issue or how big of a problem is this? Right now, there's over 390,000 children in foster care in the United States. The number does go up and down. About 5 years ago, it was as high as 437,000. The average age is about 8 years old. It does vary by state. I mean, there's certain states where this is more difficult and there's higher numbers. Like California has the highest number. Last year, they had over 46,000 kids in foster care in California. The lowest state was Delaware with 427. Let's see, some other interesting numbers to put your head around. Last year, they estimated there was over 19,000 kids that aged out of the foster care system. And the question then you should be asking yourself is, okay, so they age out, meaning they hit 18. How do they do? Well, and the numbers are hard to estimate because once they leave the system, a lot of the data becomes less hard to keep track of. But about 50% of them are homeless within a few years. A lot of them struggle with unemployment, homelessness. I know there's some other statistics, too, about how the kids end up when they age out of the system. You were mentioning earlier a few things, Megan, about when they age out, what happens.
Yeah. I think when we think about aging out, we think about kids who get to be 18. And It doesn't mean they don't have any support. Often they have a little bit of support, maybe from their bio family or from previous foster families. But, you know, think about any 18-year-old throwing them out in the world by themselves with little support, and they are going to struggle. And then you, on top of that, think about kids who have not only little support when they age out, but have maybe bounced around from house to house or have just not been given as much support even in childhood to build skills. And so, yeah, the statistics have gotten better, but just like Dr. Knapp mentioned, it doesn't always look good. A couple more things are 87% of boys who age out of foster care will go to jail or prison. 71% of girls exiting foster care will become pregnant within the first year of them exiting care. And so it's just with a lack of guidance and being so young, it's honestly not very surprising that these statistics are as high as they are. And I think these youth who have aged out are really resilient. They have a lot of really great strengths, but just the lack of support and guidance can sometimes lead to outcomes that are not so great to set them up for adulthood.
Yeah. I remember in the past when I worked with a lot of human trafficking issues in Atlanta, Georgia, before I moved here to Virginia, a really disproportionate number of foster kids end up getting caught up in the human sex trafficking industry.
Yeah.
Criminal industry.
Yeah.
And so it's horrible. I should tell the listeners, too, I mean, I just quoted that we're, you know, somewhere around 400,000 kids in this foster care system in America. There's only 214,000 licensed foster care homes in the United States, and most of them don't have two kids. So what does that mean in the big picture? Well, what it means is there's not enough placements for these kids. There are group homes that a lot of them go to, but in some states, they just don't have places to send the kids. And there's I don't want to exaggerate here or, you know, be accused of hyperbole, but there are a number of states right now where there are no placements for kids, and these kids are literally living in the DFACS offices with social workers. And that's horrible, and they don't want that. But there's a number of initiatives around the country right now where churches are trying to motivate their parishioners to take in foster kids and having all kinds of support systems. And that's great, but the need is so huge. Now, it also, this is sort of a lead-in to our topic here. There's a lot of implications for education for these kids going forward. Like nationally, only about 3% of foster kids end up with a four-year college degree. And about 50% of the foster kids don't even complete high school. And so basically their statistics are not good. And that bothers us that, you know, all of us sitting here who really work with this issue, that just pulls at our heartstrings. And fortunately, we're not the only ones. I mean, praise God, God's raised up some people. There's a gentleman named David Rice who has underwritten this ABBA Scholar program here at Liberty University that provides some funding for our program here, ABBA Scholars. And so let's sort of lead into that. Megan, why don't you tell us about ABBA Scholars and what the goals are of it and a little bit of how it started maybe.
Yeah, so like Dr. Knapp said, we're starting this program. We're calling it ABBA Scholars because ABBA means father in Aramaic, or dad or daddy, which is a more kind of astute name. And we want kids to be successful in higher education. And I think a lot of times when we look at youth who've aged out, the reason why the numbers are so low at 3% for them graduating is because they don't want to be part of a system anymore, is because they've been so hurt by the child welfare system, so jumped around from home to home that they feel like they're better off caring for themselves. And who could blame them? I would feel the same way if that was my life. And so our goal for the program is for them to come here tuition free so that they're not graduating with debt. And then also to be able to give them support and show them that this system of higher education is not one that is oppressive, but one that will provide them with opportunity and one that will give them the opportunity to be supported in ways maybe they haven't in the past. And so, yeah, going back to why we're calling it ABBA Scholars is because we want them to come and receive a higher education and be successful here so that they can be successful in their chosen careers and in the gifts that God has given them. But also through the support, they can come to know God as their Father. I think something that I've kind of, the Lord's been teaching me, is that we have all been spiritual orphans before. And so we are more connected to foster youth than I think often is in the front of our mind. We have all been there. And I think recognizing our connection to foster youth can be really helpful in working with kids. And so I'm hopeful that students can come and get that support, that they can be successful, and that they can grow spiritually, academically, and launch successfully into the world. In other programs that have worked with youth who have aged out, the numbers shift drastically. Mm-hmm. Statistics shift drastically for kids who have had some sort of support after aging out. For example, let me pull up the numbers here real quick. 93% of youth who have aged out and are connected to mentoring families or some sort of program complete their education goals. So 93%, as opposed to 3-4% of kids who graduate from college. Less than 1% of boys connected to a mentoring family after they age out have any interaction with the law, as opposed to 87% of boys who age out who don't have a mentoring family. And so that's kind of the goal for the program, is to offer support, to let students grow in their strengths, and to let students grow spiritually as well.
So listeners, you might have heard that real quick, but yes, we're talking about kids getting to come to Liberty University for free. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people are going like, oh my goodness, you got to be kidding. I mean, aren't these private schools like a crazy amount of money? Mm-hmm. And they'd be lucky to get to go to a state school or whatever. But no, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about helping kids come here to Liberty University completely for free. Mm-hmm. And Megan identifies donors and scholarship money and all kinds of supports for these kids to be able to come here. And we're going to make it happen. And it's in process right now. And so it's awesome. And this is totally with the heart of God to support these kids. And it's so exciting. And they can succeed. Mm-hmm. And you were just quoting the statistics of other places that are doing this, that it does work. It does help. Now, but before I act like, oh, wow, you know, we've solved the world and world peace. Everything's, you know, easy and happy now. There's some needs these kids have. Like, and I know, Megan, you've worked with them for years. Mm-hmm. What are some of the needs that you see with foster kids?
Yeah, I think a lot of times when working with foster youth, I'm going to say all of them that have experienced some sort of trauma, because I think being in the foster care system itself brings about trauma, even though sometimes it can bring redemption and be a great system and help a lot of kids. Being removed from your natural family is traumatic. And so with that trauma comes a lot of coping mechanisms that kids have learned that work for them very well when they're in foster care and very well when they're trying to kind of fend for themselves. But when we kind of ask them to come into this environment of higher education where we want to walk alongside them, sometimes we're asking them to give up a little bit of their control. And that is really hard for all of us. Nevertheless, a kid who has survived and who has thrived being in control of their own life. And so I think some needs then practically that comes about is, I think, for example, living in dorm rooms where you're having to live with other students side by side can be really hard, because in some of these kids, and, you know, they've been in foster homes where they've had not great situations living with peers. And so that's, I think, going to be a huge need to support kids living here residentially, working on, and I think, again, every college student sometimes struggles with living with their peers. And I think that's going to be a really big need, that sometimes for a student who has biological family or a foster family, a family support outside walking alongside them when living on a college dorm, like, it's hard enough. So if you're coming in and you have no outside supports and you're having an issue with your roommate, that's could be a reason to drop out of school. Like, I think just everything that you think of when you were 18 to 21 that your parents helped you with, these right. students don't have that. And so those are the biggest needs. I think it's different for every student, obviously, but just all of those supports of that your parents provided you when you were a young adult, that's the support that these students need. And it's harder when you're not a parent because you haven't earned the right to speak into their life. You haven't had, you don't understand them. You have to kind of be understanding that you might not always be the first person that they're going to want to come talk to. And so breaking through those barriers is going to be a challenge too. And then besides that, also just the financial support outside of scholarship. Another thing, like when I was in college, my parents would send me, I don't know, $50, $100 every month for ordering pizza with my friends and for getting snacks and like buying notebooks. And so that kind of support as well, these students might not have.
That's one of the reasons I loved when you proposed, well, Megan was the one that proposed the ABBA Scholars name for the program. And I, when you mentioned that, I was just like, yes, that's what it is. It's dad, it's daddy. Mm-hmm. And of course we're hoping that ultimately by caring for these kids, that points them to their ABBA father or heavenly father that is available and desires a relationship with them and to support them. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're saying about, yes, all college students, it's a challenging period of time. Yeah. There's a lot of stresses as students are adulting, residential students. But when they have the support, like you said, of family or friends, family network, extended family, I often say, we don't realize the richness of our own support networks.
Yes.
I think just tend to have, I think we tend to take them for granted. You know, I remember as a kid, I couldn't wait till I turned, when I didn't like my curfew or I didn't like, whatever. Mm-hmm. I couldn't wait till I turned 18 because I was going to be an adult and I didn't need anybody.
Yes.
And I was going to do it all on my own, which
that
is such
magic
a lie.
Day, your
right?
18th birthday, all of a sudden.
And then you become an adult and you find out, wow, adults need family too. Mm-hmm. I need somebody to call about advice. Mm-hmm. I need someone to say, hey, the mechanic is telling me my car needs this repair. Do you think that's a good idea? Should I do that? I mean, sometimes it's financial. Sometimes it's somebody that's willing to give you movie money. Sometimes it's somebody that's willing to help you make that repair on your car when you can't afford it right now. Sometimes it's negotiating the university is such a complex system. There's so many resources we have. But I think about, and we see this with our first generation college students too, who may be in intact families, but that whole idea of having someone in your life that can help you figure out, well, how about if you call the financial aid office? They might be able to answer that question. Or, did you know that there's, we have an office of disability and accommodation. If there's any kind of mental health diagnoses, any physical disabilities, there's support for that. But negotiating the system can be really challenging. And like you said, with some of these kids that have had trauma, they don't have that same sense. I think sometimes trauma can impact folks where they don't have an internal confidence that things are going to work out.
Yes.
And so when they feel at a loss or they feel discouraged or something, they're quick to think, see, this couldn't be me.
Yes.
This isn't going to work out for me. This is too difficult.
Yep.
I'm not going to be able to do that. Or there's no help for me. So that's what I just wanted to say. That's what I love about Megan being coming from a social work background. I think you, and having had the experience in the child welfare system, you kind of understand how comprehensive the needs are.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Knapp, I remember you talking early about this program saying we want to wrap around these kids.
Mm-hmm.
We want to not only help them find the dollars to make this possible, and we want to support them, like you said, Megan. And so how do I manage dorm life and roommate? And what if, they're staying up till, how do I negotiate conflict? But there's also, how do we help them know what to do if they're struggling academically?
Mm-hmm.
How do we help them know, where to, I was talking with my granddaughter who is starting Liberty. Yay!
Oh.
And she was talking about, she's petrified of going to her first day. That's just who she is. I'm sorry, I'm talking about you, sweetheart. I don't know if you're going to hear this podcast, but I'm not going to mention your name. But she was talking about, she's so awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, she has so much to offer, but she's really nervous about her first day in class. And she knows it's going to be fine. But she also has a family, and comes around her and says, "You're awesome. People are going to love to make friends with you. You're going to be fine."
Yeah.
You know, so I, you know, that's where my heart goes out to these kids that may have some network, may have some support people in their families or former foster families, but there's usually holes in the net.
Yes.
In the safety net.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
And it's usually not as comprehensive. So I'm really excited for the students that you're working with even now, Megan, because they may make a really great network of friends and only need Megan to help them figure out how to access academic supports.
Mm-hmm.
Or there might be somebody else that really wants to talk with you about how to negotiate that roommate conflict.
Yeah.
Or somebody else that says, "Oh no, I got this really scary email from financial aid and mm-hmm. they're saying I have a bill due, but I didn't think that my, mm-hmm. I didn't think I was going to have a bill. You know, what do I do?" So yeah, I'm really excited about that.
Yeah. And it's a good point, because I think too, like a lot of it, especially in early adulthood, is just having someone there to do it with. I think some of the things, like for example, I never completed FAFSA because I went to like one of the three schools in the country that didn't take federal aid. So I never had to do FAFSA. So I'm helping students now navigate FAFSA. I know nothing about it, but it's like, okay, we'll figure this out together. And I think that support, even of just like me being honest with them and saying, "I don't know how to do this either. You don't know how to do it, but we're gonna be okay and we're gonna get through it together." Mm-hmm. I think that is like the biggest thing that we can offer these students, because I think sometimes they do feel like they're on their own and navigating all of these things. And yeah, giving them the confidence in their own abilities to do it. I think that's also a really good point. There's a student I'm working with now, and she's nervous too about academics and things like that, but she is transferring some credits from a different school and she has all A's.
Mm.
And I'm just like, "You're gonna crush it. Like,
right?
You're gonna do so well. Like, you are so great academically." But yeah, just sometimes all of us, you know, when we go through difficult things, life gets us down and it messes with our confidence to handle future problems. And I think especially with young people, that is even more true when you've gone through so many things as a young person. So yeah, I think just being there with them, I think will be the biggest support we can provide. So that's a good point.
Yeah, there's so many needs, like you're saying. I mean, there's all those offices, the mm-hmm. academic mm-hmm. support and tutoring and all this stuff, but there's so many needs the kids have that, you know, we might not think of. I'll tell a little story. I remember back in 1992 when I was that social worker at the group home in North Carolina, we got to the holidays. It was Thanksgiving. And there was this one boy I worked with. All the kids were supposed to go to some relative or someone.
Right.
He literally had nobody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked the state social worker, could I bring him to my own house, my parents in Atlanta? And they were desperate for anywhere.
Yeah.
So they're like, "Yeah, sure." And so I took him down there and went to my mom and dad's house. And we had a real traditional for me.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving, you know, the old Norman Rockwell kind of thing, a big table and the turkey and stuffing and all that, and about 15 or 20 relatives and aunts and uncles and all that. And I'll never forget the boy I brought with me. He was sitting there at the table and he was looking around all big eyes.
Yeah.
And he told me afterwards that was the first Thanksgiving dinner he ever sat down to in his entire life.
Gosh.
And he said he'd heard about it and he'd seen pictures and, you know, Hallmark TV movies and stuff like that, but he'd never been there.
Yeah.
And he and I had a really close bond after that.
Mm.
And so that's the kind of support these kids need.
Mm-hmm.
It is the academics. It is all this other stuff, the tutoring and all that. But they need coaching and mentoring and networking them with all the supports that are there. And that's going to be Megan's role here. And she's already doing it, folks. I mean, she's already contacting foster kids who are going to be coming to Liberty and building those relationships and building that trust. And so that's the goal. That's the vision. So, we're excited about it. We know it's totally from God, and it's going to really minister to these kids. But, you know, I don't want to necessarily just give a 5-second summary of the vision, because I know God's put all kinds of thoughts and creative ideas in both of your hearts about the vision for Abba Scholar. So let's talk about the vision for a second. Like Megan, let's just imagine Abba Scholar goes great, all these things start happening that we're planning and working on. What would it look like if everything went great?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah.
If I could have my way.
Yeah.
I think I would love to have a cohort of students so that they can rely on one another and they can have peer support, because I think that is so, so vital for any student to be successful in higher education, in college, and anything in life. We need relationships, not just with people like me who may be passionate and who care about them, but with peers. And so I would love there to be a cohort who is uplifting one another, who, yeah, that they're able to come here for free, and having a continuous kind of financial stream for that would be amazing. And to have them be able to navigate higher education through peer support, through support from me and others that are able to help with the program as well. And then to graduate and be able to get careers that they're successful in, that they like, and ultimately to thrive in higher education, in the classroom, out of the classroom, in community, and then once they graduate. And ultimately for them to know that God is their father. And that would be amazing. That would be what I think it would look like. Yeah.
So I've got a picture in my head.
Yeah.
This, I mean, you know, I just love to see, like, I'm thinking graduation day, robes, everybody's in their caps and their gowns, and you've got this maybe a special celebration, big lunch or dinner or something like that for this cohort where they're celebrating that they made it, and, you know, Megan's in the picture and they're, you know, the faculty and the, you know, people that have come alongside these students to just celebrate what God's done and to anticipate. And then we don't want to stop there. Graduation. Now I'm thinking about alumni celebrations, you know, wouldn't it be cool, you know, to have a group of students that graduate and that are, like you said, sharing their success stories. You know, one of the, we have had in the social work program, we've had an opportunity to have, we've had a couple of students that were in the foster care system. Most of them had some very robust support systems that have enabled them to continue. They either with a foster family that really kind of took them in, adopted them really as their own, you know, whether officially or not, but that was a major support, or they had a vision. You talked earlier, Megan, about, you know, trauma and how God transform beauty from ashes, right? God often transforms that. And the students, I have one in my mind in particular, I can picture him right now, you know, that he said, I know that God allowed a lot of suffering in my life, but that's so that I can go out and I have a heart for others. And and, you know, I know right now he's out there, you know, caring for, he wanted to help children like him, families that were struggling. And he's doing that right now. And I think the ripple effect of what God is doing through him and through other students. So the idea of equipping children that have had such a hard start in life, for them to enjoy that success and possibility of graduating with a four-year degree, but then also how God's going to use that, you know, going forward. And but of course, I'd like them to stay really connected so that they can become part of it, just this growing network. And then maybe they end up coming alongside Megan or to support students that are still in the process, that are still in the program. So that would be very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be. I mean, this is awesome to hear the vision and think about it and dream about it, because dreams from God come true. And of course, and we think this is from God, so I think it is going to come true. But now, I should say too that, you know, the listeners who are hearing us talk about all this, this isn't just for us. Like, we're all like rah rah and yay yay and here. If you're listening and this really touches your heart, you could donate to support this. You could give money to Liberty University and designate it to the Dean's Excellence Fund within the School of Behavioral Sciences. And I have control over that fund, and I use that to help support this. You could also refer foster kids that you know to Megan here with the ABBA Scholar Program. And so you can do that. There's lots of things that you can do. But I also want to be respectful of everyone's time today. We get all excited and get going here. But we're getting near the end of the podcast. And I want to ask, you know, Cheryl and Megan, too, if you have any final thoughts before we wrap it up about, you know, either ABBA Scholars here, which is at Liberty University, for kids to come here for free. What final thoughts has God put on your hearts and minds today you want to share with the listeners?
Yeah, I think a little bit bringing it back to what we talked about in the beginning. I often tell people, I talked about this a little bit, too, but I don't have, I think a lot of time people are passionate about foster care because they have known when they were young it touched their heart in some way. I don't have like a super big story of why I wanted to go into foster care other than like I think the Lord has made me passionate about it. And I think throughout scripture he is so clear about caring for orphans, and foster youth in a lot of ways are modern day orphans. And they do have, it's not that they don't have families, it's not that their families don't love them, but it's that their families aren't able to provide them with support that they need oftentimes. And I think God calls us over and over again in scripture to fill in that gap. And it's not a suggestion, it's a commandment. And I think that oftentimes youth in foster care, youth have aged out, are overlooked. And so I'm just so excited to be a part of God's work in this, because I think he cares about it so deeply and gives us resources and passion to join in his care for it and his heart for it. And so, yeah, so I don't know. Those are just my thoughts about why this is important and why we need to care about it, because God cares about it. And I think that's the bottom line. So. Yeah,
well, that's great. Well, God certainly brought you this far and you've developed so much already. So I'm excited to see what else God does through you in this process. And any final thoughts, Cheryl, about all of this?
Well, it really just as Megan was saying, it just reminds me, I think there's an opportunity here, and this is really what we aspire to do with all of our students, I think, at Liberty, but there's an opportunity for them to see themselves in a new way. And I'll get choked up, but you know, scripture tells them you are his workmanship, you know, created in Christ Jesus for good works. And, you know, what has been exciting is to see some of these students start to see themselves in that light and say, God has created me as a unique human being with these strengths and gifts that are just so exciting, and he's created me for good works, and he's going to use me to meet the needs of other people. So I think, you know, for some of these kids, they would never have dared to dream that this would be a possibility, that they could have a career that would require a college degree and go serve him in that way. So I think it's exciting in terms of what he can do in their life, but how he's going to use them in the future. But I just love that this is giving an opportunity for them to dream something they would have thought was way mm-hmm. out of reach. So
yeah.
So I love Megan that you're helping them dare to dream.
Absolutely. You know, I'll share one verse too. In John 10:10 in the Bible, it says, "The devil comes only to steal, kill, and destroy, but I've come that you might have life and have it more abundantly." And, you know, that's what has brought these kids to foster care to begin with, is the devil has allowed or created circumstances in their lives where they've been, you know, abused in different ways and neglected and things like that. But, you know, it's God's heart, as this verse says, that these kids would have life and have it more abundantly. And, you know, we know as Christians that, you know, God is all about restoration and redeeming people and bringing hope, and that'll preach.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, that's what God is all about. And that's what this program is all about. So, I mean, we're here on this podcast today advertising this, promoting this, because this is the heart of God. And I'm so honored to work with both of you on this project, you know, knowing that God is going to use it to bring hope and healing to lots of kids who need to develop the gifts and talents that God gave them. God gave them those gifts and talents.
Yes.
And you know, and here's Liberty, an avenue where they can develop those gifts and talents. And so we're excited about what God is going to do, aren't we?
Absolutely. Well, with no small amount of advocating from your part.
Yes.
We didn't talk about that, but I've just appreciated your persistence in bringing this to fruition.
Yes.
It was a wonderful idea, but it took a lot of. So we're thrilled to be part of it.
Yes.
Well, I'm with Megan 100%. On this. God commanded it.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
We just say, "Yay, Lord, let's do it."
All right.
And so, you know, Lord willing, we will. And it is already in process. Megan's set up so many things already. And so we're excited to see what happens. So thank you all for listening today, and thank you for being guests.
Oh
I really
gosh,
appreciate
yes.
it.
Yeah, this was fun.
Megan and Professor Nitz, I'm really honored that you're here today. And listeners, thank you for joining us today on the Mental Healthy Podcast. We're glad you joined us, and tune in next time, and I'll have some other really cool people on. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Mental Healthy. Please be sure to subscribe for more episodes and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. You can find this podcast on all your favorite podcast platforms.
We hope you join us next time for more on Mental Healthy.
Music for this podcast is licensed under Creative Commons by Excel Music Publishing at freemusicpublicdomain.com.